rates may come down in some trading functions. The longer term is there because of repricing of risk. And if the Fed wants to do it, it'll kill the dollar. And maybe they'll sacrifice the dollar. If they charge down these rates, inflation will be back because it takes a while to kill it. And if inflation comes back, what are they going to do? And if they drive them down, the dollar will go down, and they don't want that.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are watching, listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Harry Lutz. Well, we've got Gordon T. Long on with us now. Gordon, we've been talking about collateral, the quality of collateral, what the banks will take, what the Fed will take, and why you should care about it, basically. And we're having this banking crisis, banking collapse. Some of my guests say that the banking system as we know it is going extinct. This is an extinction event for the system. What is your take on it?
I would lean towards what they're saying. I'm not maybe quite as negative as that, but this is an unusual situation that we're in, and it keeps cascading, and it's like shocks and shock waves that are coming at us. And we're still in the early stages. You recall 2008, when Bear Stearns hit, we went on for close to a year with little failures, all of the lending operation before finally Lehman collapsed and AIG was collapsed, and but it just kept getting worse and worse, and then suddenly collapsed. It's like famous writer in Key West has said, you know, going bankrupt. Bankruptcy was slow at first, and then suddenly, and
first, then quickly.
And then quickly. So and that's kind of what I sense. It's kind of the same thing. We got these serious shocks that are hitting that are like a waterfall, but they keep expanding. They keep growing. You know, right now they're in the banks. They're in the lenders that are supporting out there that are not banks but still lenders. We're seeing it in the credit and the commercial real estate market. And now it's moving into other areas like the zombies, the bonds, not the sovereign debt, which is a discussion we'll get into, but the zombies. We're seeing a small business has got a problem. And I seen just here in the last week, shipping and packaging companies, they're starting to feel it. So it just keeps, it's broadening, and it's getting worse. So there's some major concerns here. And the Fed reducing the interest rates, which everybody thinks is the panacea, I don't see it as being the panacea. I actually could see it accelerating the problems. Initially, there may be, you know, a lot of excitement, but then it starts to break down. Kerry, not to go on, but the problem we're facing is we have a systemic, long-term structural problem that we failed to address. We kind of nibbled at it in 2008. We've excess leverage and easy credit. We know the story. I mean, all your listeners know the story. But we've changed. I call it the great moderation. Others do too. That we had 40, 50 years where we had globalization, reduced costs, so, you know, labor arbitrage. We had financialization, which took interest rates down, made interest rates cheap to finance products, the zero bound. And then we had mercantilism. You remember that with Japan and certainly with China, where they take all their profits, money, send it back to America, buy our bonds, drive our interest rates down, drive the value of the dollar up, and they win, and we become a 70% consumption economy. All that has now changed. And it hasn't ended, but it's slowed. And that shift that we're going into brings with it a whole series of new things. And that, for example, stagnation, I can talk about it, but there's a change in risk premiums. Risk premiums that are in the process of changing, of repricing risk, of risk premiums associated with the bonds, primarily the bonds you're seeing, but also it's going to come into equities. and with those changing, because we've had that COVID was a destabilizing event. Ukraine was a destabilizing event, but from not from the Ukraine itself, but from the sanctions that were imposed. And then we've had the most craziest period in history of policy, fiscal, public, monetary policy that frankly just is bizarre. And so then that's what's created these shock waves. COVID, then we had the supply shock, then we had the inflation shock, then we had a credit shock. Now we're in the middle of a banking shock. I think the liquidity one is just only beginning. And then after that, and the one that terrifies me is, as we just said at the beginning, a collateral shock, almost a reverse wealth effect. Your comments, you with me on this?
So the question is, like all of these countries around the world, all these industry, they borrowed in dollars, expecting the dollar to lose its value. The exact opposite happened. That's led to massive insolvencies in China all over the place. And it seems to just be getting worse.
It is, and it will get worse. You know, the dollar is, if you travel in the world and say you, the dollar is so overvalued relative to what you can get when you travel, though it seems like you can't buy anything with it here in the States, but it's so overvalued, that does not mean the bottom's going to fall out. I've been writing about de-dollarization, et cetera, but that does not mean it's imminent. Matter of fact, I can see some serious strengthening of the dollar only because the problems in Europe are as bad or worse than ours, specifically in their banking industry, their pension system. The issues in Japan are only getting going. I don't mean to get negative. And China is just not coming out of this lockdowns the way everybody was anticipating. So it's irrelative. The dollar still looks like currently a safe haven. Longer term, that's a whole different story on the dollar.
So let's bring this to the Big Mac index. All right.
Yeah, they're a good example.
There are two indexes that I like to follow. Number one is the cost of a Thanksgiving meal, because I find that to be a much better indication or indicator of food inflation than anything the government releases. And because it's a consistent basket. It's not like one Thanksgiving, the price of cranberries goes up, so they substitute blueberries. It's the same basket every single year. There's no substitution. And the Big Mac Index, which basically measures the relative cost of a Big Mac in dollars country by country. Interestingly enough, the latest one as of January 2023, the most expensive Big Mac was in Switzerland, for $7.26. And the cheapest Big Mac was in Venezuela for $1.76. So if you could kind of arbitrage Big Macs, you could really make a tidy profit here, couldn't you, Gordon?
Yeah. Well, just substitute Big Macs for other things, and there is a lot of that going on.
Arbitrage, yeah.
And it is being arbitraged, make no doubt about it. You know, at the end of the day, you know, things like equities are like the tail on the dog. The money is first in the credit, and then second in the dollar and the bonds. And that's a game of arbitrage between countries right now. Just, we're getting a little off track, but that's what I see it. But inflation is still with us. You know, we keep saying, well, it's down, it's falling, CPI is coming down. Core's not, CPI is coming down. Well, just a minute. Okay, it was 8% and 6%. Now we're, you know, down, getting into the 5% era. Whoa, on core. Whoa, just a minute. It doesn't mean inflation went away. It's just another 5% on top of 5%. And so the consumer in America in a 70% consumption economy, it's just can't keep absorbing this. They just can't. And now, Kerry, what I saw on the conference calls, the corporations can't pass it on. They've pushed. They've tried. They can't pass it on because people are substituting. They're moving away from brands. I mean, you know this well. They're moving away from brands. They're going to no names. They're stopping. I mean, look at Tyson Foods. They're the biggest supplier of protein, of meat. And they got serious financial problems. The costs, they have to cut. They have to get their costs down, because their costs are going up. But They can't raise the price because they're losing, not losing share, just the product isn't moving. So that says people can't afford meat. That's an example of it. But, you know, you made a really good point, Kerry, about the numbers, the government numbers versus the Big Mac. The government numbers have always been misleading, especially in inflation. You know, substitution, you mentioned, we have imputation, we have hedonics, we have there's so many games. And they keep going on, but I have never seen since January, and frankly, the Secretary of Labor resigned. He was the former Boston mayor. He was only there briefly. I got to believe he just wasn't going along with it. But the BLS, the numbers that they keep putting out make no sense. If you spend any time looking at the labor numbers, the unemployment, employment rates, labor rates that are coming out, it's not just me. Goldman's screaming about it. Morgan, all the major players are saying this. They don't still make any sense. They're using these numbers to buy time. And that's a whole discussion in itself. But I you're better to use a Big Mac. I agree with you.
So how high are interest rates going to go? Are they going to dip for a little bit because it's safe to go outside or what?
You know, Kerry, that is the question right now. And, you know, and a year ago, I decided personally, we came to the conclusion that 3.5% on the long bond or the 10-year was where we were going to be. And we were going to be there for, we didn't know how long, but we're going to stabilize in there. And so we've been playing a game, and I credit this to Guggenheim, Scott Mitterrand, who subsequently died not long after. He was very strong in that 3.5%. And he pretty well convinced me in our study that this is where we needed to be. So we've been trading, if it gets up to 3.65, we're out, or rather we're in. Now, if it gets down to 3.35, 15% bandwidth, we get in. So we've been finding ourselves, that has been really, really effective. So the answer to your question, where's it going? We think the risk premiums on bonds are only going to go up. We think that it's going to take us up to 4. We think we're going to have to get into the 4% range, because right now that Fed funds rate with the core come, the CPI is down just a little hair below now the Fed funds rate, but it's that core. And I don't know how much more time they need more time to buy it to get inflation to fall down. They won't. I think we've stopped with rates going up, but I think the premiums will push it up. Now, having said that, you know, when the Fed starts to signal and starts to come in, the bond, you know, the yield will drop and prices will go up. But short, a little bit longer after that, we'll, you know, it depends how they do it. We still think we'll see 4% for a protracted period on the 10-year and a shorter term, but a whole different game. Right now, we're 2-year. This morning was trading over 4% as usual. Did I answer the question there for you? Or
I think so. It could still.
So rates are not coming. Rates may come down in some trading functions. The longer term is there because of repricing of risk. And if the Fed wants to do it, it'll kill the dollar. And maybe they'll sacrifice the dollar. If they charge down these rates, inflation will be back because it takes a while to kill it. And if inflation comes back, what are they going to do? And if they drive them down, the dollar will go down. And they don't want that. Because the issue is right now the debt, that's not the debt ceiling, it's the absolute value of the debt. So the interest rates, they want them down, but they also, you know, it's the dollar value of it. They can't kill the dollar, it's the golden goose.
Yeah, so they're opting.
Which impacts gold, by the way.
Right. So they're opting to destroy the economy, the global economy, rather than the dollar?
More or less, because it is destroying the... They're trying to get as far along as they possibly can. The damage is, as I just said, with cascading and these shock waves is going on. They just got to be able to get inflation somewhat under control, and they know that they're going to damage the economy. They've already know that, but they don't want to. If the unemployment starts shooting up, and it will. Congress will be screaming beyond belief and demanding it, and so they'll have to capitulate. Yeah. So they're buying a little bit of time. So
they got to kill the village to save it.
Yeah, right? More or less. That's what they have to do. Well, they've known that right from the get-go.
Yeah.
That they were going to have to take us into a recession. I guess the point I'm trying to make is they're hoping it'll be a decent recession, not a hard landing. And I would have went along with that as a possibility maybe 4 months ago, as, in spite of all the negative I see, if China had come back stronger. But China is just not. It's not China. Their imports are way, way down.
And
they just don't have the demand. There's not enough global demand. Look at oil's down. Commodities are down. The demand isn't there, and it's slowing up dramatically. I just read the Fed numbers here a few months ago. Whoa, what's going on here? What does it do? It seems like a complete collapse. Now, that's manufacturing. Let's face it, United States is not really the leader in manufacturing anymore. We have a presence, but it is reflective of the slowing economy. I see it up here in the Northeast. There's just no question things are slowing.
Sure. Yeah, you can tell. Well, not so much here in Florida, although there's a little bit more inventory in the real estate market, but the houses are selling because people are still fleeing your neck of the woods to come here.
Oh, yes, very much so. And even up here, by the way, the housing is still moving. I see listings go, and the houses within days are gone, maybe weeks. But if they're not staying on the market that long, they're moving, even at the higher rates. And I have new construction still going.
Hey,
so that's not an indicator where the credit's coming from. They're still building. It's still quite evident. But I do see, I've seen rents on residential apartment rents, which were through the roof.
Yeah, they
are starting to weaken because I think up here they overbuilt.
Yeah.
So there's so many mixed signals out there right now, and I think we have to get up to a higher plane and see. And it's like you don't see an iceberg move, but it moves, and so we're just gradually just keep moving and moving and moving it, and things keep getting more difficult. And because the economy, because the market, which is about the only thing that looks good, has been holding up, we think things are fine. But if you take the market out, everything is serious problems. So if the market suddenly dropped, down to maybe 3,200, 3,600 on the S&P, all of a sudden we'd have a whole different view of things.
Yeah.
And, and as you well know, too, with the, we've got 8 stocks holding up the market. 8 stocks.
Literally.
And then why? That's the other. Why are they holding it up? Why are people flooding it in? Fear of missing out. We all understand that. But I learned on the conference calls, they're all going to artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. They really believe it's the big productivity hit that they can get because they got to figure out how to solve their margins.
Yeah.
And I sensed on the conference call that the analysts are all buying into it. Especially when IBM came out, you probably saw their headlines.
Yeah.
They're going to get rid of 6,000 people by avoidance of hiring.
That's what they claim.
Artificial intelligence.
That's what they think, Gordon. Let's face it. That's what they think they're going to do.
And that's the perception in others from Amazon through from the analysts. And therefore, these 8 companies, a big part of it is this belief is giving people enough confidence and fear of missing out are in the market. If something punctures that balloon, there's no breath in the market. There's just no breath. And we've been here before. Remember the Nifty 50s?
Yeah.
Remember what it was like in 2000? I guess I'm getting gray-haired. I've been through this so many times before. When the market gets this narrow, with just the generals get to be fewer and fewer of them out there, suddenly one of the generals fails and everything comes down.
Hey,
Look at those
Nifty 50 stocks. Xerox, where are they now?
Exactly. Go through them.
And where's Kodak, right?
Yes.
Where's Kodak now? I haven't heard much about them lately. Have you? Well, actually, we did, but it was basically some scam thing, right?
haven't heard anything out of it. My former boss, George Fisher.
Yeah.
Left us at Motorola to take it over. He had these great designs of what he was going to do with digital technology and getting out of the yellow box business. Haven't seen a yellow box in years. It's all digital, but Kodak's never did it, right? They owned it. Remember when they owned?
Oh, God, yeah. They had the market. And yeah. Now Crocs, too.
Talk about an ultimate franchise. Well, look at IBM.
And IBM.
Owned the market. I worked at IBM, you know. And in the 70s, we owned the market. Now they're fighting for their life. And if it wasn't for buybacks and borrowing money to pay dividends, there's nothing, I believe, there's no value in the stock.
No.
It's just a milk cash cow game that's going on. Institutions buy. I don't mean to be that negative. I mean, it's great company, great ploys. This is bad strategy.
I could not give you more. Yeah, they were short-sighted. They goosed up their profit, per share profit, by buybacks.
Well, it was a tough game we were making. The margins were so good on mainframe. Mm-hmm. Why would you come out and start selling smaller products? So we nibbled in the PCs, but there's no margins and it's all volume. So you play a game, you keep dragging it out, but other guys come in and take the business. We didn't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Senior people did not believe there was money in the software business. So this little guy, Bill Gates, suddenly owns the operating system and the PC. Rest is history. Microsoft's market cap is compared to IBM what?
Yeah.
Double, triple, four times?
Yeah, and look at Google, you know, and Apple, and all of them, you know?
Well, I'm kind of negative on this movement to artificial intelligence, but the movement where potential that we see there, I see too, is stunning. It's not going to be as fast. It's going to be a little different. And I actually, when you were the first one that actually with ChatGPT that you were playing around with it. I remember the last time we talked. We had 500 million people bring down beta. There's 1.6 billion using it. Now, is it riddled full of problems? Without question.
Yeah.
But you know, that's what happens to pioneers. They get arrows in the back. But the when this app market, the people that develop the apps for the phones and the tablets, they start to take that technology and the next generation and target it and clean it up. I just put out a video called the End of the Cubicle Class.
Yeah, I saw that. I enjoyed that too.
And I may be over exaggerating it, but there's just so many. I mean, you're a lawyer.
Yeah.
But just think of what you can do putting briefs together, just pulling it out of the database.
ChatGPT write the thing just about.
Exactly.
I had a recommendation letter I needed to write for somebody. And I said, you know, I'm a total nitpicker over how I do this stuff. And I said, well, let's try ChatGPT, see how it will actually write a recommendation letter. And it was about 85% as good as what I can write, which in this case was enough. And it saved me a half hour of editing, basically.
Perfect. It's better to have it pay somebody to proof something than writing it from scratch when it's just donkey work anyway, right?
You know, there was an article in Kenya that is like the number one, the epicenter of cheats for hire for papers, term papers, college thesis and all that. I don't know that people really do their master's thesis with them, but they do papers, and they were bemoaning the fact that ChatGPT had cut their earnings by 2/3 for these professional cheaters in Kenya. As to them, what does it mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an income source. They don't care about academic dishonesty. You know, they've got to eat, and I don't blame them. But you know, that's an unintended consequence here, Gordon.
Carrie, I did a lot of work on productivity, and as you know, the productivity in not only America but in the developed world is in free fall, has been here for a year and a half. It's a major issue. And the squeeze that are on the corporations right now, that's centered from inflation, also going to be about money being tighter to get it on highly leveraged balance sheets, not having invested in the future, is going to force them to chase, as I said, this artificial intelligence and derivatives from it in a massive way. And if Goldman Sachs, who said they thought there was going to be upwards of 300 million people that were going to lose their jobs, don't believe that. But, you know, 25, 30, 40 million people over the next 3-4 years, high paying jobs. That's the issue. They're not hourly workers. They're higher middle income workers and higher the skilled. That is going to be incredibly a big hit to an economy that's going into stagflation. That's the problem there. But it's coming. So picking the winners in this arena, which is always difficult. There's another Google, there's another Amazon, there's another Microsoft in that crowd.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, I was watching a video of two pilots discussing AI. Can it replace a pilot? And the thing is, like, what they say AI does is it guesses. And the quality of the guesses, like, you ask it a question and then it follows it with words, it's about 80% correct. But you come up with some ridiculous results that are inaccurate and untrue. And the thing is, it's not self-aware. It doesn't know that it's making the mistakes. It doesn't even know what it's doing. My brother once said, you know, you could teach a monkey to play Beethoven on an organ, but it's never going to know that it's playing Beethoven. And I think AI at its current phase is very useful. Don't get me wrong, especially the ability to analyze huge amounts of data, almost unimaginable amounts, at a rapid clip, and then come up with an answer to a question. There's definitely an application for it. It's way better than what we have now. But till it becomes self-aware, it's going to have its limits. It's not replacing pilots. Maybe it can augment or mostly supplant drivers and cars. I mean, I love my Tesla so-called full self-driving beta. It's not there yet. I mean, it makes a lot of mistakes. When it first came out, I said it was the equivalent of a 16-year-old who just got their license. It had the confidence of a 16-year-old who just got her license, but not the actual judgment, you know? And it's gotten a lot better, I'll say that. But you can't trust the thing. Exactly. And you can't trust these things either at the current point, not that you won't be able to later.
Well, it's always, exactly. It's always like that. My days at IBM, I was convinced we did beta sites by selling the equipment and putting it out there and then fixing the problems when the customer site. There was the mainframe era. There were so many problems that you couldn't believe it. But you saw them after the fact. And then you got better and better and better at it.
Yeah.
And that's what comes with new technology. So I'm not trying to, in no way, I'm saying there's going to be change with it and there's going to be some real winners in it. And it is going to make its mark, but it's not a panacea tomorrow, next 24, 48 months. But I do see in it, though, Carrie, is I've been looking at patents. And I don't know if you've been, the number of patents that are being produced in America, it's just, we're not doing it. They're just plummeted. Yeah. They're coming in China. They're coming in India. They're coming in all other countries, right across the board, not just in technology. We're not investing in newer technologies. Now, AI, who's going to be the leader in it? We'll say, well, Google, and we'll name some players. There'll be some American player. The bigger players will come out of other countries. And so where is the investment for America? And this could end up being a bleed for us, where it gives us some productivity advantages, but our company's going to survive. It's like batteries on the EVs. Oh, we're going to go to electrovolt. Well, who's going to make all the money on EVs? In China. They own the lithium mines. They own the cobalt mines. They got a lock on it. So we just said, well, it won't be EV, it'll be hydrogen. They got a lock on that. So, you know, where's our leadership? That's the thing that I spend a lot of time at, trying to figure out where a sustaining competitive advantage is. And it's getting narrower and narrower. And I see it, as I said, on patents. I see it on these SPACs. You know, are they really legitimate? I used to be in private equity. And, you know, we take a company public is a very complex process through the financing program. We don't do that anymore because Sarbanes-Oxley, we get around it with SPACs. I'm seeing unicorns. But they're not producing. They don't sustain. And then they're getting taken offshore. How many IPOs are we doing anymore? So that's worrying me in a big way too right now, of really trying to sustain our economy. And it also goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning. God, I'm a really positive guy here today, aren't I?
Yeah, you're a breath of fresh air today.
That's because I spend so much time in the credit markets.
You got to stop looking at them. Got to stop looking. Well,
hey, exactly.
That, I think you've given us a lot to chew over here. Just tell us where we find your work, how we subscribe to you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kerry. Yeah, I exclusively put over all our research up at MATA, MATASII.com. That's MATASII.com. Videos, newsletters, and we do them more as part of our research process, and they're there. They're free. There is a subscription business for other unique pieces, but I encourage everybody to join us. The only thing we ask is feedback on it, because we learn a lot from frankly the people that are reading our work.
All right. Well, that's what we like to hear. Hey, if you've got any questions for Gordon, myself, KL@KerryLutz.com. Write your comments on the YouTube channel below. Subscribe to our newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Gordon, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Talk to you again, Kerry. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.